hey, what's going on? Happy Monday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. But first, let's recap the Reds game from Sunday afternoon. Reds going for their first sweep of 2024, coming up against the Chicago White Sox, Graham Ashcraft versus Michael Soroka. The Reds left the bases loaded in the top of the first, but in the top of the third, Will Benson singled, and then Christian Encarnacion Strand crushed a home run 422 feet to left center field, putting the Reds up 2-0. Spencer Steer would walk. Steer then stole second base. Jake Fraley walked. Both runners moved up when Ellie De La Cruz was robbed of a hit by White Sox second baseman Nicky Lopez, but then Candelario smoked a ball off the glove of White Sox first baseman Gavin Sheets. Two runs scored. Reds took a 4-0 lead. The White Sox would get two back in the bottom of the fourth against Ashcraft. The second run scored when Jake Fraley dropped the third out of the inning on a fly ball to right field. But in the top of the fifth, Nick Martini hit a two-run home run left on left, putting the Reds up 6-2. In the bottom of the sixth, Graham Ashcraft got two outs, but he did leave two runners on base, but Lucas Sims came in, got the final out on a weak ground out. Graham Ashcraft's final line on Sunday, 5 2/3 innings, 5 hits, just 1 earned run, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts. In the top of the seventh, the Reds piled it on. They scored 4 more runs on RBI hits by Nick Martini, Tyler Stevenson, and Christian Encarnacion Strand to make it 10-2. The White Sox would get 2 off the Reds' bullpen in the bottom of the seventh, but Jonathan India had an RBI sac fly in the top of the ninth, and your final score was Reds 11, White Sox 4. Reds pull off the sweep on the road, and they improve to 9-6 on the season. Here's what Nick Martini had to say right after the game.
Nick Martini, home run today, scores a couple times, drives in 3. Now, as far as a team goes, it's tough to win on the road, but is it more sweet to come into a place and sweep a club on the road as opposed to home?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, going on the road, everything you do on the road, travel and stuff like that, to be able to get 3 wins on the road is big.
Now, we talk about left on left all the time. This was your first home run, left on left in the bigs. Is there extra sweetness to that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, especially not facing them too much, to be able to do that in that spot felt amazing.
Take us through that at bat.
I was just trying to hit, honestly, just trying to hit something hard. I knew he had a harder slider, so just tried to get good swings off and was able to lift one.
After your momentous opening day, it's tough. It's a roller coaster ride here at the big league level. To continue to get the opportunities, you have to be feel like you're blessed.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's so many ups and downs in baseball. You never know what can happen on any given day. But to be able to keep getting chances, definitely blessed and grateful for it.
How's the feeling in the clubhouse with this team right now? You guys now 3 games over 500.
I think the vibes are high. Like you said earlier, big sweep on the road. Now we got to go to Seattle and take care of business. But I think the vibes are definitely high.
Here's Reds starting pitcher, Graham Ashcraft.
How important was that first inning to you? You strike out 3, but you just did. Set the stage for the rest of your day.
Yeah, I mean, it was very important. It was a very big inning. I mean, even though it was the first, I mean, I felt like I didn't have my best stuff today, but I was able to make it work and able to make some big-time pitches and get some big outs. And, I mean, it just kind of setting the tone right there kind of led up to set up the rest of the game right there. So,
when you say that you didn't have your best stuff today, what wasn't working that you had to work around?
I mean, velo was down up there until the last inning. I mean, my body just didn't really feel that good going into it. And I know there's those days when you had to work through it, and luckily it went my way today. So,
are those the most important days for pitcher over 162 games when you don't have your best stuff? You don't feel good that you can grind through it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, those days when it's a grinding game and you can go out and execute and make the pitches when you need to and get the big outs. I mean, it just anything to help the ball team win. I mean, it helps the club out, and that's the best thing possible. So,
do you think the quality of this pitching staff, maybe the rotation in particular, gets overlooked, especially when you're pitching where you are and you add Lodolo back to the mix?
I mean, yeah, it's a lot of us are. I mean, heck, all of us but one are really young, and. We're starting to come into our own more and more each season, each game. I mean, there's still a lot for us to learn, and I feel like we're starting to execute those things that we've starting to pick up on, and it's just part of the process is carrying it out through the season each from day-to-day basis. So.
And lastly, here's Reds manager David Bell.
It has to be highly encouraging, the pitching you got in this series for some young guys.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, first of all, to win three in a row, you got to do everything well. All areas of the game, I thought we played well. Starts with the pitching, of course. Graham was great today. Using the slider, his cutter, it seemed like he got stronger as he went. I had to battle a little bit early, so that's what it's all about. Great start today, but offense, base running, plays in the deep on the defensive side, it all added up and played well in all areas.
You guys stole a lot of bases in this series. Is that pretty much the MO when it fits? You guys are never going to change in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big part of our game. I think it creates a mindset, an attitude about how we want to play the game. And when we have opportunity, we're going to try to do it. And, you know, try not to force it, but try to be prepared and try to take advantage of every opportunity we can. And we have the speed, and guys take a lot of, you know, they take a lot of pride in it. They prepare themselves to be able to take the bases whenever, you know, we can. We're not going to be 100%, but we do want to be high percentage.
The pitching and the base running and some power, and you pretty much, I know they're struggling a little bit, but you pretty much hand them.
Well, yeah, I mean, guys stepped up and, you know, had, I mean, Martini off a left-handed pitcher today with, you know, just took a great swing. A lot of our left-handed hitters today had really good days, and it's nice when they get a bad, tough left-handed pitching and then come through like they did, starting with Martini. I mean, at that point in the game, the momentum was shifting a little bit, and, you know, that's a big home run.
Well, our deep drive of the game from Sunday was, of course, Christian Encarnacion Strand's two-run home run, putting the Reds up 2-0 in the third inning. Home run came in at 105.4 off the bat, going 422 feet. And our deep drive of the game, sponsored as always by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks as always to our friends at DSC. All right, let's check out scores around the NL Central. Pirates beat up on the Phillies 9-2. The Brewers finally lost. They lost 6-4 to the Orioles. Orioles able to salvage one game in that three-game series. Cubs beat the Mariners 3-2. Cubs took 2 of 3 in that series. And the Cardinals got blanked 5-0 by the Diamondbacks. So, your NL Central standings. Brewers sit at 10-4. Pirates 11-5. Reds and Cubs both 9-6. Cardinals holding up the back end of the division at 7-9. All right. Well, here's myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube.
Well, well, well. Here we are on a lovely Sunday night edition of Chatterbox Reds. And what do we have right in front of us? A sweep. A beautiful sweep it was. I get that they were playing what some are calling a AAA team, Nick, but I don't care. Hopefully your Sunday was as good as mine.
My Sunday as well. My first question for you, Trace, is does today make up for the Sunday in Oakland?
No. I got a very special day that will make up for the Sunday in Oakland, and it is yet to be done. So that day is a dark day in hell. Today is just a nice day.
Were you at least happy when you saw the lineup card and all the regulars were in there today?
Yes, that is true. I mean, I see where you're going with this now. It took me a minute to catch up. Yes, you're right. When you have an opportunity to beat a really, really bad team, I don't care what day it is. If it's a Sunday and it's getaway day and you got some guys that are a little sore, you tell them they can take the next day off tomorrow. We're going to get this win today. We need it. Although I do like... I kind of like our backups this year, for being honest. Maybe that speaks to how much I like this team more than I like the one last year. But you know what? My vibes are all-time high right now for me. I don't know. The chat got me going before the show started. Yeah, they're just funny. Like, at this point, they got a little humor to them. I like people with humor. You know, you go out, you hang out with some friends, Nick. I always gravitate towards the ones that try to be funny. Now, sometimes I'd rather people attempt to be funny than realize they're not funny and shut up. But I like the ones at least try. I don't like the ones that sit around and act all serious all the time. And it was nice to see CS get it going. You know, we talked about this on this show, I don't know how many times. Like three or four shows in, we kind of kept saying, you know, it's CS seeing the ball a little bit better. He's seeing the ball better. And thankfully today it somewhat paid off. Again, I'm always apprehensive to kind of get overly excited on this show because I do know that it was the White Sox, and it definitely seems like they are closer to the Barons. Is that their team? Is that the name of the AAA team? It seems like they're closer to the team that the Michael Jordan played for than the actual White Sox. But you know what? I'm not going to apologize for winning Major League Baseball game. So kudos to CES. Hopefully that gets him going. And we need him, quite frankly. We need him.
So. Yeah, he's going to face three really good pitchers the next 3 days. So hopefully he actually is coming out of it. I think CES is the kind of guy that when he's slumping, it's going to look almost worse than some other guys just because how he attacks the baseball, doesn't walk at all, just is a straight-up slugger, which you can be effective like that. I don't think it's the most efficient way. You'd love to have guys like Will Benson that work these 7, 8, 9 pitch at bats, but that's who Christian Encarnacion and Strand. He's just a guy up there that comes up swinging. He's a Vladimir Guerrero type hitter that can hit pitches that aren't even strikes 400 feet out of the ballpark. So when he's going bad, it's going to look really bad, but that's just who he is as a player. I like that David Bell continued to show confidence in his young hitter. I like that he didn't move him out of the number three spot that he stuck him in early in the year. He's letting him figure it out. And the Reds need a big season from Christian Encarnacion and Stranden. I think ultimately they'll get it.
Well, he has all the tools. We've talked about it. He has the makeup. There's no question. It's just a matter of piecing it together. And it all comes down to one thing for most of these guys. I think at this point, it's just confidence. There's certainly an element of that because these guys are young, but I also think that there's an element of all of this because of this is the first time maybe expectations, in my opinion, are a little bit different for the vast majority of these guys. They expected to win last year. I'm not trying to take that away from them, but I mean, going in from last year, it felt like they were playing with house money, if that makes sense. You kind of got on a little bit of a roll. You get the winning streak. You kind of this new up and coming bunch, no expectations. This year there was expectations, and I think it's going to take some of these guys maybe a minute to get a little bit of their footing. And when they do, I hope, you know, for our sake, for Reds fans' sake, that they get hot and they continue to be hot. And maybe that just means that they're good players. All said and done. Speaking of good arms, Graham Ashcraft, what a wild guy this guy is. You know, it's like trying to figure him out is hard, quite honestly. And maybe we talk about these young guys being roller coasters. Maybe the biggest roller coaster of all of them is Ashcraft, because there are times when I watch him throw and I think to myself, is he the best one of all of them? Because like he has really good stuff. Like his stuff is, I mean, I'm not trying to knock Hunter Green when I say this. I think his stuff's just as good as Hunter Green's. But I could also understand, like, Hunter Green, young guy, can continue to get better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when I say that, I genuinely mean it. And, you know, that's coming off of a 10-strikeout day from Lodolo just a day ago. So, you know, again, there is an asterisk here. They're playing a team from the south side of Chicago. But at the same time, he's kind of parlayed this into a couple good starts. And he did a good job today, Nick, of extending himself a little bit. I think he got up to, 105 pitches, I think. He was right around that number. And it felt like he didn't really fade off all that much. So, you know, him being a number five, I've said it before, I'll say it again. That gives me such a boat of confidence when you say, hey, Graham Ashcraft's your fifth starter. Now, whether or not he will actually be your fifth starter throughout the entire year in regards to, you know, I guess his numbers per se, I don't know. But I do like the concept that he's going against what you would likely think that the other team's fifth starter. We're going to have an advantage almost all year, in my opinion.
Yeah, 104 pitches today. Only gave up 3 hard hit balls the entire afternoon, so that was good to see. White Sox are a little bit better against right-handed pitching. Probably their best hitter, Gavin Cheats, is a left-handed batter that has incredibly drastic platoon splits. So, a good outing. Took care of business today. I'm with you. Like, Graham Ashcraft is the kind of guy that I feel like if you stuck him in Major League Baseball 15 years ago, he'd be the best pitcher out there. Like, yeah. Like, no one, you're right. No one, he throws with this like ridiculous, his cutter is like 98 miles an hour. Like no one could do that. But now these hitters are so accustomed to that it almost makes a lot of what Graham Ashcraft do not as dominant. But yeah, I go back and forth in my head on him. Sometimes I'm like, man, Graham Ashcraft like might be at the top of the rotation star, and then other times I'm like, man, I'm not sure if this guy's going to be in the league in 5 years. Honestly, that's how drastic it goes start to start with them. He's the hardest of all the Reds pitchers to figure out, but he continues to get it done. And yeah, kudos to him.
Speaking of another guy we've gone back and forth on, Nick Martini, just the other day, I think we were talking about if he doesn't get it going relatively soon, he's going to have a tough time keeping his roster spot. And then I obviously quickly mentioned that if he gets three hits in one game, he's probably going to be, you know, hitting 300 and slugging 975 or something along those lines, or having an OPS of 975. Long story short, good to see him get going. You know what? Martini's had so many good big moments. Do you think that plays a role? Like, do you think it matters to them? Like, because you can just look at the numbers and you can look at the analytics, Nick, right? And it will say, hey, here's his numbers. But then when you kind of scratch that away, he's had opening day, which is a big, it's an elevated event, right? And then you add in, obviously, the home run against the Cubs last year. You add in a couple other big hits he had towards down the stretch last year. And it feels like he's kind of been elevated a little bit. I wonder if that matters or not to these guys. Does it to you?
I think it does. I mean, I think the Reds love him. They love his fit. He definitely, whenever you see a shot in the dugout, like he's the guy that they love having around. But I know it's all coming two games, but he's hitting 290 with a 980 OPS. So that's who Nick Martini is. He's a guy that has developed some real power. I think he's fine. I mean, he's batting like seventh and eighth. He's batting eighth in the lineup. And he's a guy that could do some damage. I don't know what his end of the year numbers will look like. I could see it, going, pretty drastically one way or the other, but I don't have any issues with him. The Reds also don't really have a whole lot right now down in AAA. Blake Dunn's been out all week. He's only been pinch running. Jacob Herdebees is on the IL. Rhys Hines looks absolutely lost. The only guy they got is Connor Capel, which is maybe a Nick Martini light, if we're being like, so right. It doesn't really matter, but the Reds do. I know they love this guy. I've heard a lot about Charlie Goldsmith told me a lot at spring training about how they just love Nick Martini and his fit with this team. But right now he's producing too, so it's kind of a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, all it took, as I said before, was maybe one or two games of him having a good solid game at the plate, and you're going to find yourself in a position where you look at his numbers and they're going to be A-okay. And you add in the idea of a clubhouse kind of fit. I think that they... Listen, whether you agree with all the things the Reds do or not, they clearly decide, they make some of their decisions based off of the way in which guys fit in the clubhouse. They love Nick Martini in that area, and not to bring down a house full of rage here on the internet, but there's a reason they said no to a certain pitcher at the very beginning of there being speculation of him being available to be able to sign with the Reds. They nixed that idea very quickly. And I think the reason for that is because they clearly care a significant amount about what the clubhouse looks and feels like. So, something to keep in mind with Martini.
And a guy like Nick Martini, I think is a good like balance with this team, where you have these guys like Ellie De La Cruz that just came up with all their tools, Christian Encarnacion, and you got all these guys that were, these really highly regarded prospects. And then you have a guy like Nick Martini that's been a grinder, that's had to grind to get to the big leagues, had to go play overseas just to kind of keep his baseball career alive. I think it's kind of a good balance of kind of having both of those type of players in your clubhouse to kind of help some of the younger players along as well.
Yeah, got some grit. Nick Martini's got some grit. All right, moving forward here in the show, as always, we have a sponsor, and they are Game Time. They have a beautiful ticketing service that you can use. You can get the tickets in two clicks. You can see where the seat is. And if we're being honest, they're really good deals. So you should give them a try. And if you're going to give them a try, please use the code CINCY. That's C-I-N-C-Y. Code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off your first purchase. Please download the Game Time app and support us, and also support yourself. Get yourself out there. We got a lot of folks in the chat that have been to some games recently. Nate's, I seen, was there. Hoosier Daddy was there. I'm seeing some other folks in the chat that were in Chicago. Chi-Town, I think, was there. So shout out to the folks getting to the ballparks. Ned Flanders. I know that we don't have bullpen on here right now, but we can kind of talk about this right before we get into Mr. Benson. Justin Wilson, long leash or early DFA candidate. And I'll start and I'll say, I think that matters a significant amount of what's behind him. Sam Moll not being available is a big deal, right? I don't want to overreact on this one game, right? But I would say Justin Wilson's pretty low on the totem pole in regards to guys that I trust right now coming out of the pen. But kudos to him. Kudos to him. He got out of it. And on top of that, I would say he got a big out. Who did he throw against? He got a big out against Bryce Harper in that Philly series, too. I don't want that to get lost on everybody either.
Bases loaded, right?
Bases loaded. Yeah. Bases loaded, a big spot. Big spot, and yes, he got him to, I don't remember exactly how he got him out, but he got him out, and that's all I care about.
Yeah, I mean, he's only pitched five times this year. The Reds are paying him $1.5 million, so I don't think they're just going to, this early in the year, I don't think they're wanting to just dump guys that they put that much money in. I don't know, it's not that much, but Sam Moll was actually, we'll talk about him in a minute, he actually was back at AAA. Had a rehab assignment. They stopped the rehab assignment. He went back. Looked pretty good today. But I'm assuming they're going to want him to really, prove it a little bit more.
Right.
Moll also does have options. I know he was so good last year. But some of this is a numbers game and keeping as many arms as you can have available throughout the course of the year. So you're not having to dip deeper and deeper and deeper down to your bullpen. I don't want to jinx anything, but I do feel like the Reds' bullpen depth in the minor leagues is really strong right now. I do feel like the Reds do have some quality arms that they could dip into at some point, but that depth can really wear thin quickly, you know, when you have three or four injuries kind of all pile up at once.
Yeah, we found that out already, called the Reds infield. And then what I was going to add to that was, I don't know how well he's going to come back. It feels like he's having some problems. Maybe we're just not getting the full truth on, you know, the development or when he's supposed to be back, et cetera, et cetera. Or the Reds are, I don't think that they're doing this on purpose. And maybe it's just a coincidence, but it seems like the Reds are very overly optimistic about their guys returning. Like, they're not lying. I'm not sure, you know what I'm saying? But it's like TJ Friedl the other day, it was like, oh, he might be ahead of the schedule and he might be back a little bit sooner. And then all of a sudden, like, there was an article, I think, like maybe less than a week later where, oh, you know, Friedl has a setback. And you even tweeted out, like, it's a little misleading. He didn't have a setback. He's on pace to come back in the time frame that he was originally plan to come back in. It's just that the Reds came out and said that he was doing so well that I don't know, man. It's like that's where the whole Matt McClain thing, I'm going to pump my brakes. If I see Matt McClain before opening day of 2025, I'm not going to say I'd be shocked. I'll just be pleasantly surprised.
It's one of those things, like, I don't know what other teams do because I don't pay attention to it, but right. I wonder, is every major league team, you know, this way? My guess is they probably are. I don't know. Maybe that should be the next time I start asking, like the little podcast that I did where I'm asking someone from each NL Central team to talk about their team. Maybe that'll be a question I'll ask. Do you feel like your team over exaggerates injuries and is too optimistic about it? And if they all say yes, they're like, oh, this is just how they all do it.
Right. It'd be par for the course at that point. All right. Let's get into Will. A guy that when he first came up, well, maybe I should say when he came back up after his first stint, that would be more appropriate. Probably, in my opinion, takes the best at-bats on the team outside of arguably, if you want to put them in a little pool, TJ Friedl and Spencer Steer. I think that collective group there, Will Benson, they have the most poise at the plate. You know, I don't know if the analytics back that up, to be fair, chase rate and all those types of things, but it seemed like Will Benson was struggling, though, for a minute. In regards to what made him, I guess, tick last year, or what made him great last year in regards to his eye. But I guess it's, you know, good to see him get on base again.
Yeah, he only has a 220 batting average right now, but got a 339 on base percentage because he's walking in 15% of his plate appearances. For some context, last year he was at 12%. MLB average is usually about 6 or 7. So Will Bitts is turning into a guy that you know, isn't like Joey Votto level of getting on base and walking, but this is a real skill for him. And it's just nice because even when he's slumping a little bit, you're never really slumping all that bad because you're drawing walks every single night. You're getting on base, and he clearly is a guy that can steal a lot of bases. He stole 2 today. He's right. Got 4 already on the year. So it's an incredible, you know, tool that he has. Like, he's got a 121 weighted runs created plus. That basically means he's been 21% better than league average as a hitter overall, and he's hitting 220. So just his ability to see pitches, it's remarkable, man. I just what a steal that the Reds got this guy last year. I mean, what a steal.
You know, go ahead.
It's just that whole, like, I mean, there's going to be another trade where the Reds get completely fleeced on. You know, it's going to even out at some point. But the whole, like, you get Christian Encarnacion Strand and Spencer Steer for Tyler Mahle, and God bless him, he, like, blew his arm out 2 days later. And then they take one of the players they got back, and they flip it for Will Benson. Like, there's just never going to be a better, like, a string of events than that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what gave Nick Kroll probably some street cred, per se. I think that's when he, you know, that's when he started kind of, people started making shirts about him and stuff like that. That's the word on the street. There was something else I was going to add about Benson as well. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when TJ comes back, because if Will Benson continues to play center field as well as he's played it as of late, it's almost like, are they going to be tempted to, like, be like, hey, this guy actually might be a natural fit in center field. Do we try to manipulate this a little bit and put TJ somewhere else? I know TJ's been great out there. I don't know. It'll be that is actually a really kind of a tough decision, if we're being honest, because, you know, maybe Benson could slide to right field and nothing would change and he continues to get better and better and better defensively. But I think the reality is sometimes guys just see the ball better or see the field better from certain positions. And we'll find out when it comes to Will Benson on where they decide to play him. But it's nice to see him make some plays in the outfield. And overall, not to go deep down the rabbit hole here, but it was nice to see a lot of guys make some pretty good plays in the outfield. If we're being quite honest, outside of Fraley, you know, just having a blip on the radar and just dropping a ball, a really good, clean defensive effort from the Reds. So hopefully, I want to say hopefully that'll continue, but I know the answer to it. I'm not trying to be negative, so I'm not going to say anything else.
The Reds had a great series defensively. Like, the 3 games that they put together defensively against the White Sox were incredible. I mean, there was play after play after play all weekend. So, you know, you'd like to maybe, can we save some of these defensive plays when we have a little bit slimmer of a margin of error? But no, it was awesome to see just everyone playing well. Will Bitts is interesting. I know I tweeted earlier today, hey, maybe he's just more comfortable in center field. I looked a little bit deeper. In the minor leagues, he only played 87 games in center, played 123 in left, and 298 in right. So he was a lot more acclimated in the corners. It's one of those things where I don't know if he just got better this offseason or if he's more comfortable. Maybe it's a little bit of a combination of both. As you like to say, the truth could lie in the middle there.
Yeah, it probably does.
I don't think you can get cute and move TJ Friedl, who's a proven great defensive center fielder. I see Will Bitts making these plays that are just like, man, he looks a lot more comfortable out in center.
This is where, and I know I give a lot of, I kind of, what's the right word to use? I kind of poke, jab, and have fun sometimes with the analytics and the StatCast. This is where I would rely on StatCast a little bit here to try to figure out what this all looks like, just because I'd like to know, you know, how much speed Will Benson has. What kind of jumps are we getting? Are these great plays truly great plays? Or are they, you know, or are they maybe just kind of a little bit of a facade just because he's not getting as good of a jump as TJ Friedl would have gotten, those types of things? So as much as I make fun of outs above average and those types of kind of characteristics from time to time, I would give it some thought on trying to look into that and see, you know, what ultimately you make of it. But We'll find out at a later date. Not something I'm overly concerned about, if we're being honest, about where is Will Benson going to play. But I'd like to have TJ Friedel back, as long as we get the TJ Friedel back that we had before, right? I'm always scared about that, if we're being honest. When guys go down, it's like, when they come back, are they going to be the same player? And I'll say the same thing about McClain, you know? I love Matt McClain, but he's been out for so long now that it feels like I've kind of forgotten what it looks like to see him play. So we'll see. And they all get back. Another guy, Tyler Stevenson is a tough one, because I am still not sold, Nick, but I'm thankful that there is maybe as light at the end of the tunnel. I don't know. What you have him on the rundown, so you probably have something to say about him. I don't know. I can't get myself there.
5 hard hit balls today. I felt like he deserved to be on the rundown. He only had one hit to show for it, but he is really hitting the ball hard. He looks like a different player offensively to me so far this year. He feels like, it's almost like, really going back here, it's almost like Ryan Hannigan. Ryan Hannigan's first couple years, he was just a guy that would just, it was a singles hitter and that's it. And then there was one offseason where I remember a quote from him, it always stuck with me. I decided I wanted to be able to do damage. And it feels like Tyler Stevenson's at bats, he's trying to do damage. And I wonder if it's where he's kind of batting the lineup. You remember he was batting third and fourth at the beginning of last year. Now he's at the bottom of the lineup. Hey, look, if I strike out, it's not that big of a deal. If I don't get on base, it's not that big of a deal. I'm going to go up. I'm going to, you know, take some really good hacks. I'm going to try to do damage. And it feels like he's doing that this year. I really like what I'm seeing from him offensively. I need to watch a little more defensively, and I'm not an expert, so I'm not going to be able to give you some expert opinion on him catching. But he hasn't stuck out, right?
He's gotten better.
He's been a liability. I don't know how much better he is, but it's nice to not every night be like, yeah, Tyler did this, 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 and this. I haven't seen any of that.
No, I think Tyler's gotten better. I really do. I give him some credit for that. It's just ultimately, at the end of the day, is it going to be good enough? Is the combination between the defensive inefficiencies that he's had in the past, and maybe he'll continue to kind of shore those up to where it won't be like a talking point anymore, and that would be great. And then you couple that in with the offensive side. And the crazy thing about catching in the big leagues is if you are a average or above average hitter in the big leagues as a catcher, you just got to be somewhat near the Mendoza line when it comes to defensive metrics, and you're going to be a pretty serviceable, if not above average, catcher in the big leagues. So let's find out. I'm not sold yet. I hope at some point I guess for the lack of a better term, he proves me wrong. I mean, I don't know how else to say it other than that. But another quick thing I want to point out, Sean, in the chat, Jake Fraley, I obviously mentioned he made a blip in the outfield, but Jake Fraley continues to be, and I always hesitate in saying these types of things, but I do think he's probably our best hitter against right-handed pitching, and he continues to do that. And he continues to show why he's one of the best hitters on this team. Like I'm not even talking about the offseason that he had. And we all know, obviously, the family strife that he went through. I give him all the credit in the world for kind of being able to battle through that per se. But taking that out of it, he's still like a great player, you know?
Yeah, obviously Spencer Steer and Ellie De La Cruz have kind of got all the hype and
overshadowed him. Yep.
But Jake Fraley's got a .424 batting average, .972 OPS, and I mean it's because there's been so many lefties. I think that's kind of why he's kind of gone under the radar. But he's just quietly been outstanding at the plate. I mean the Reds are gonna face 3 left-handed pitchers in Seattle. 3 really good right-handed pitchers. So it's going to be a fun, hopefully, homecoming for Jake Fraley, right? Going back to Seattle. And I don't think he's going to find any of the players that he was traded for in Seattle. So I'm sure he's looking forward to this week.
Yeah, 3, you are something, man. I tell you what, you really know how to get the people pissed off at Nick Kirby, don't you? You do. Look at you smiling. Hey, you deserve that one. That was pretty funny of you. I give you credit. I don't know if you picked up on that, everybody, but that was pretty funny. Nick did a funny right there. That was really good. To be clear, they're going to face 3 righties. You corrected. I think you said lefties at first, and then you said righties. But to be clear, they're going to face 3 righties. Fraley's going to be in the lineup, and you know, hopefully he continues to do Jake Fraley things, like become Rake Fraley. All right, moving forward, there is obviously Reds MILB, considering it's a Sunday night. You got a chance to probably see most of the box scores by now. Nick, is there anything relatively exciting down on the farm?
I got a few notes, just a few. All right, Louisville, they won 3-2 over Columbus in 10 innings. Extra innings, walk-off wild pitch, bats 7-8 on the year. Another tough start for Connor Phillips. He only threw 31 of his 54 pitches for strikes. Failed to make it through four innings for a second straight start. Carson Spires, though, came in, I'm assuming, much earlier than expected in this one in his return to AAA, and he was outstanding. Only gave one hit over 4 1/3, no runs, one walk, two strikeouts. Sam Moll, as we talked about before, his fastball velocity trace was up, topped out at 94 today. It was only at 92.5 his last start, but he threw a shutout inning, walked one, struck out a batter. Tony Santion, just keeping on, another perfect inning for him. Tony Santion has allowed a total of one run in 14 2/3 innings combined from spring training and AAA. Not a whole lot going on the offense. Reese Hines 0 for 3 with a walk. Blake Dunn actually scored the game-winning run in this game, but he didn't start for a fourth straight day. But he has pinch run twice, so I'm assuming they haven't released any official word on what his injury is, but I'm assuming the fact that he's pinch run twice in the last couple of days is hopefully a good sign. Connor Capel, he was 2 for 4, hit a home run, his sixth already at AAA. His home run was 110 off the bat. Capel's hitting 304 with an OPS over 1,200 through his first 15 games. Really the only good offensive performer for the bats. Mike Ford, he got the day off today. All right, Double A, Chattanooga, they won 7-5 over Tennessee. They rallied to score three runs in the bottom of the ninth, and they walked off the Tennessee Smokies on a Jack Rogers home run. The Lookouts, after starting the year 0-5, have won three straight games. A tough start for Chase Petty, gave up 8 hits over 4 1/3, 5 earned runs. But Zach Maxwell in the bullpen, he now has struck out 9 batters through his first 3 2/3 innings for the Lookouts. He's a guy that I would not be shocked if he goes straight from Double A to the big leagues if the Reds have a bullpen need at some point this year. A good game from Austin Hendrick, 2 for 4. His single in the ninth inning was what got the Lookouts rally started. Tyler Callahan, 1 for 4. He stole a base. Dayton Dragons, they lost 4-2 to Cedar Rapids. Dragons now 4-5 on the year. Great start today from Javi Rivera. 4 innings, just gave up one run and one hit, struck out 3. Cam Collier, 1 for 4 with an RBI. Hector Rodriguez, 0 for 4. Carlos Jorge, really good day, 2 for 3 with a walk and a stolen base. Sal Stewart got the day off. Victor Costa, he is really struggling to start the year. He was the guy the Reds got back for. Brandon Drury, just 1 for 24. That's a 0.42 batting average. All right, and then Daytona, they were the last team. They just went final a little bit ago. They lost 10-8 to Palm Beach in 10 innings. Tortugas gave up 5 runs in the top of the 10th. They fall to 4-5 on the season. But some good offensive performances. Alfredo Duno, he was 2 for 5 with a double and a walk. Ricardo Cabrera, he was on base 4 times with a double and a home run, his first of the year. Tough days at the plate for Carlos Sanchez and Eismith Pineda. Carlos Sanchez, really rough day, 0 for 5. Was caught stealing and committed 3 errors in this one. So that's your Reds MILB presented by DSC. And if anyone else wants to sponsor them, you can get your name on that.
Carlos Sanchez.
You had a rough one.
Brother, you just gotta find a way to take that one on the chin and just move forward. I mean, that's a tough day. 3 errors, man. I mean, there's been weeks where you play baseball and you don't get 3 balls hit to you, let alone 3 errors in the same day. That's tough.
Again, there's no video on this. Again, I remember Reese Hines committed 3 errors the other day. I went back and was able to watch that, and I watched it. And I was like, yeah, those 3 errors were a little sketchy. So you never know, you know. Who knows who's the scorekeeper for the low A Daytona Tortugas.
Yeah. Speaking of scorekeepers, I was in and out a little bit watching my son's soccer game and watching the game on my phone. And maybe it got fixed. It could have gotten fixed 10 minutes after.
It did get fixed.
Oh, thank the Lord. Thank the Lord. Like I just don't know that.
Like, you got to change that.
What are we doing? I mean, honestly, man, what are we doing? I don't understand the logic between some of these scorekeepers. The Candelario play, they called that a hit too, I guess?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, man. Whatever. At this point, you know what? You kind of just give up. You stop caring. Like, it is what it is. You just call it whatever you want to call it. Do they get paid? I'm about to look into that. I'm going to ask next time I'm around some folks at Great American Ballpark. Is the official scorekeeper get paid, or is that just kind of like a volunteer job where they just give it to somebody that's been around the facility for a long time, and they're like, yeah, well, the league office will fix it anyways if you make a mistake, so just call it whatever you want.
That's a good Big J journalism question there. Yeah. I like it. Chatterbox investigates.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't imagine being a pitcher and seeing a ball go to right field and it smack my right fielder's glove right in the middle of his glove and it falls to the ground. I look up at the board and they give him a hit. That's why you shouldn't care about stats. That's why you shouldn't care about stats if you're a player. Just saying.
And that's why Graham Ashcraft is like, look at my XWOBA for the day. Don't look at anything else.
You know what? That's where analytics does win. Because if you can find a way to get rid of all that human garbage that some of these guys are pencil whipping, I'm all for it. See, I'm not anti-analytics. Just, you know, just sometimes.
Like the challenge.
Right. Yes, a healthy challenge is good for everybody. Can't just believe anything everyone throws right in front of your face. This country should know that by now, you'd think. But I digress.
I agree. I used to be a very, like, pull the pitchers early, make starters just go four innings. And I've really backed off on that because I think you really see over the course of the year what it does to a pitching staff. And so there has to be a balance, and that's definitely a healthy thing for sure.
No doubt. All right. We have the chat all confused. We have them all confused. They can't figure out if a lefty's throwing or righty's throwing. Maybe there's an ambidextrous guy out there. Let's once and for all settle the debate, Nick. Who, what, when, where, and why?
All right, we have three right-handed pitchers going for the Seattle Mariners. Reds come in 9-6. Mariners come in 6-10. Quickly running through the series, Frankie Montas against my cousin George Kirby tomorrow. Tuesday be Hunter Green against Logan Gilbert. And then Wednesday, Andrew Abbott against Bryce Miller. Reds have struggled against the Mariners in their history. They'd also struggled against the White Sox. They had never won a series against the White Sox before this weekend. Reds 5-16 all time, just 2-7 in Seattle. Reds did win 2 of 3, though, against the Mariners at Great American Ballpark in a really wild series last year. First one, the Reds won that bullpen game where they had Michael Marriott making his only major league appearance since 2016. Fun fact, Michael Marriott is currently on the Seattle Mariners AAA affiliate. And then the second game of the series, the Reds came back from a 5-1 deficit. Nick Martini had a 3-run homer to tie it. Christian Encarnacion Strand had a walk-off single. Mariners, they have not won a series yet in 2024. They did split their opening four-game series of the season against the Red Sox. Reds will miss Luis Castillo for a second straight year as he pitched today on Sunday. And only the A's and the White Sox have scored fewer runs than the Mariners, who have scored 49 on the season. All right, George Kirby. I would really strongly advise that you don't look at that 8.16 ERA and get too excited. This is a guy that has a 3.57 career ERA through his first 59 major league starts. Last year, lowest walk rate in all of Major League Baseball. It was 0.90. The next was 1.22, so a large gap. This guy hates walking guys. So interesting to see if guys like Will Benson and Jonathan India, who've been great at drawing walks, how they'll fare tomorrow. Kirby's got a great four-seam fastball, top 10 in run value last season. First start was great for him against Red Sox, 6 2/3, didn't give a run. But last two starts, he's given up 18 hits, although he has not walked a single batter and just gave up one home run. So he's probably due for some positive regression. He's never faced the Reds, only three Reds to face him: Candelario 0-2, Espinal 1-2, and Bubba Thompson 1-2. Frankie Montas for the Reds, coming off his worst start, wasn't really that bad. Five innings, three earned runs. He's faced the Mariners a lot, Trace. 12-9 over his career 2.72 ERA, career 2.05 ERA in 22 innings at T-Mobile Park. A lot of guys have faced him. Crawford's 4 for 20. France is 6 for 13. Julio Rodriguez 1 for 4 with a home run. Cal Raleigh's had a home run against him as well. But this is a good test for the Reds, Trace. Going up against the Seattle Mariners, I think a team that has underachieved to this point, but clearly a much better team than they kind of showed so far. But hopefully the Reds pitching, I think the Reds have good pitchers lined up in this series, Trace, yep, can capitalize on an offense that's struggling right now.
Correct. Everybody's going to point towards the fact that the Mariners are due to win some baseball games, and they probably are. And hopefully, you know, I hate to say this, and hopefully people don't get mad when I say this, but this is one of those series where, again, we've talked about this before. I just want to make sure we get one, you know, just get one. I'm not saying I'm rooting for one. Obviously you want to win every series, hell, sweep them. But point is that just find a way to win one out there and make sure that we don't kind of lose the momentum we just gained in the south side of Chicago.
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening to Chatterbox Reds today. Continue to appreciate all of your support. Got some really lovely messages on Twitter, and people have left us some 5-star reviews. Can't tell you how much that means to me. I really appreciate that you are hopefully enjoying Chatterbox Reds. And of course, if you haven't subscribed to Chatterbox Reds, wherever to listen to this podcast, make sure you do that right now. New podcast the morning after every single game. And yes, we even have some late ones on the West Coast coming up this week. But don't worry, bright and early, you'll have a podcast recapping each of those games. Also, be sure to subscribe to Chatterbox Sports on YouTube, where we do live post-game shows. Also have Off the Bench, 10 a.m. to noon, with Trace Fowler talking all things Cincinnati sports and more. Also have the Kenner and Kev Show, 3 to 5 p.m. That's a simulcast from 1410 Wing AM in Dayton. So lots of content over on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Be sure to check that out. If you could, leave us a 5-star review. Really would appreciate that. But more importantly, as always, tell a friend about Chatterbox Reds. If you know a Reds fan, make sure they know about our podcast that's hopefully going to continue to grow here. We'll hope that you have a fantastic Monday. Hope you get your week off to a great start. And most importantly, go Reds.